Hello, and welcome to another episode of For the Love of the Franchise, where we take a look at some of the Moneybags films of old. And we've got an interesting one for my next pick. And joining me, as always, on this is Paul.
Hello. Yep. All good. Yep. The
been
twosome.
Would you say off there? It's been a while since I did one of these.
Yeah. That's the thing when we pick these franchises is that like they can take some of them can take half a year,
yeah,
depending on what you pick, yeah. And then it's ages until you host another one, and we don't know, it might be that it comes around a bit quicker this time, as we are only a twosome now,
yeah. Although we are open to get a part-time contributor in the future, and Craig,
yeah.
And maybe we can find a trilogy for him to do as a host for 3 months.
Yeah, and he was going to watch this one, but unfortunately, well, unfortunately for us, not unfortunately for him, he's currently in Orlando.
You have to watch it with this in the background after we've done it.
He definitely he will watch. He's watched the films when we've been doing them before.
Yeah,
so cool. He's kept up with us. He watched Austin Powers, and I know he watched The Omen as well. And American Pie, so I know he's done the last three.
So we're tacitly introducing him to films as well in the background. That's good.
Yeah, and the last film that Craig watched is the best film he's ever seen. So
yes,
it could be interesting.
Yeah. So and I thought I ummed and ahed over what I wanted because I did a horror genre. I thought it was too soon to do another horror, and I thought we hadn't done any real sort of crime or cop films yet, and I thought this. Yeah. This would be an ideal one to look at. And it's a franchise that was completed quite some time ago as well. So there are, I think, five films.
Yeah.
Deadpool was 88, 89-ish.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that more in about 4 months' time.
yeah, exactly. We'll talk to you about that at the end of the year.
Yeah, that will be an interesting one because there's at least two faces in there that were familiar to us from even now, so in the supporting cast. And I also thought this would be a good one to do because of your aversion to some of the 70s thrillers we've done in other podcasts.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but it's an interesting one, and I'll talk about my feelings about 70s films later on as we're talking about this, and it might surprise you.
Yeah, interesting. And this one, of course, it spans two decades. As I said, the last two films are 80s films, so it'll be interesting sort of look across spanning two decades as well of a franchise to see how.
Yeah, and I think Eastwood had changed over those years as well. He'd become a very different actor by the 80s. So I'm intrigued by the latest films because I've never seen any of these. So
yeah, have you seen any of this franchise before?
No, and it's interesting because when my brother got his Blu-ray player, and obviously I don't live anywhere near my brother, but it was one of the first Blu-ray box sets that he bought.
Ah, cool.
So it's interesting that I'd never seen them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So as I say, we're looking at the Dirty Harry films for this next set of records, starting of course with the first one, I think 1971. Directed by Don Siegel. Interesting, Clint wasn't the first choice, apparently.
No, I read that.
Yeah. I've lost my note now as to who it was, but he wasn't there. There were a couple of other people they looked at as well, but it was turned down by one or two people as being a little bit too violent. I think, Burt Lancaster might have been chosen for it.
Yeah, I'm sure Burt Lancaster was on the list.
He was one that turned it down because it was a bit too wrong for him. Yes, it was. There is, I found it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, it was because, as I say, it was his signature role, but he wasn't a top contender. It was offered to John Wayne, Sinatra.
That's it. Yeah, Sinatra was the one that seemed to have got quite a way along.
Yeah. And of course, he.
With the process.
He ties into another franchise as well because he plays a character in a film that was actually basically the genesis of John McClane in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Because he was in a film which, I'm not sure of the character's name in that, but he did a detective film of which the Die Hard novel was one of the series of books. And it was possibly he could have been... So he was linked with that and this, Sinatra. Mitchum and Steve McQueen were authored it as well as Burt Lancaster. But no, it was George C. Scott, apparently, who turned it down because it was too violent.
Right.
So understandable. And hard to imagine him in the role, actually. Any of them, really, other than maybe McQueen. But
Yeah.
McQueen.
Yeah, I certainly couldn't say Sinatra in the role as it is, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, he was 55 at the time.
Yeah. But obviously that by then he was
that's
part of
why
the
they went for.
Vegas Mafia.
Apparently, it was written for as a 50 something year old at the time.
Yeah.
But Eastwood was only 41, amazingly. And we said only 41. I think he'd been around for such a long time before this.
Yeah. And considering he's still going.
Warner Brothers wanted Sidney Pollack or Irving Kershner to direct originally. Pollack would have been a very, very 70s moody film. It's a very
Yeah.
interesting lot of stuff. Very good director, but it was very moody as 70s stuff. Other things I should just in the build up we should mention. The film also features a familiar face to anybody who's a Star Trek fan. Andrew Robinson, or Andy Robinson, as he's listed as in the film.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
think his first role or his first major role.
I would assume so, because again, he was another one that was still going for a long time.
Really good and really creepy in it, I must say.
Yeah.
It's really nasty. John Vernon is another face I'm familiar with, who played the mayor. He always played that sort of curmudgeonly, sort of officious twat, basically. So he was like doing this with his eyes closed a little bit in this film. And there's an actor called Renny Santoni as well. He played Chico Gonzalez, who's his partner. And he's one of these guys you see over the years pop up in a lot of different stuff. It's him from that.
Yeah, the 70s and the early 80s were very much known for that you'd see somebody play a bigger role, like a bigger guest starring role on a TV show.
Well, in
Say they
fact,
popped up on
I'm
something like
sure he was a
Cheers or
regular.
something like that.
I'm sure he was a regular in a cop show, like a Law and Order type show in later years.
Probably. And then you'd see them pop up in a film randomly, and then they'd be back to doing guest spots on TV again.
As I say, it's been a while since I did this. I think we'll just sort of free float on this and just check
Yeah.
out what we thought about the film and bits and pieces and any stats I can think of as the time that might be relevant. Oh, I was just going to throw in to start with it. It was apparently the character Scorpio that Robinson plays was based loosely on the Zodiac killer,
Yeah.
who committed 5 murders in the San Francisco Bay Area a few years before. And that sort of featured in one or two films himself. And I just want to jump in, I suppose, and we'll say this is Warner Brothers. I think this is a we've got a few of theirs now, haven't we?
Yeah,
Because
and very much Eastwood is Warner Brothers.
yes, you've had a very long relationship with Warner, haven't you, over the
I
years?
actually brought this up on one of our other shows recently. Warner Brothers have this habit of picking actors that end up becoming fantastic directors. Eastwood being one of the big names, and the reason why I brought it up on another show was Affleck, in the same way that he seems to have stuck with Warner Brothers now as well. And they just seem to have this knack of picking up actors that turn into fantastic award-winning directors.
That makes me think. I mean, that was a kind of interesting remake. Affleck
Actually, yeah.
starred in the remake of this. Would be an interesting project.
Yeah, very much so.
Right, I suppose we want to just jump into the. We'll pick around the plot a little bit. I do like the opening of the film, where we get the sniper on the rooftop, and the woman's just casually having a swim. You think, well, where's this going to go?
Yeah.
But it's quite brutal the way it's just such a clean shot, isn't it? And just,
Yeah, it is. And the fact that there's no words for the first 5 minutes of the film,
yeah.
it is just that kill, and that is it for the first 5 minutes.
Great shots of it as well. The way it's photographed, that opening sequence as well,
Yeah.
almost makes. And throughout the film, it makes Frisco another character almost in the film.
And this was my based on my comment at the start that despite the fact, as you say, I haven't been a massive fan of these 70s films, they look bloody fantastic because it's proper film.
Yeah, yeah.
Shot on. They look great.
35mm, yeah. Grainy.
Yeah.
Captures the shadows as well. See, somewhere like Frisco or LA and New York as well, those films with those gloomy side streets and the big towers casting shadows over the city.
Yeah.
And they're like this massive presence, aren't they, over a film from that period. Yeah. It always, whenever I see the Twin Towers in anything from back then, it's always sort of quite alarming.
Yeah.
Because they actually photographed really well whenever you see that in a film. And similarly, these, like the Frisco and LA skylines. And also, we get Lalo Schifrin's music kicking in as well in the start of the film. People might know him from Mission Impossible. I think he might have done Bullet as well.
Would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got quite an impressive sort of theme throughout it. It's almost quite catchy.
Yeah, and I think it's one that people will know, even if they don't know the film. They will know some of that score without having ever seen it. I certainly did.
Yeah. Yeah, you sort of... And because you all catch clips on stuff on telly, don't you, and things like that.
Yeah.
And so we'll jump back in the plot for a minute, and just we're moving on. We get the sort of rooftop kill, and we get the note. So we're setting out the film early on that he's basically going to hold the city to ransom. And I just love the way that they talk about who's put on the case. And you can tell that Callahan is just... People pull their hair out at Callahan a bit, don't they, in that department?
Yeah, and it's clear that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But doesn't really know how to execute it properly.
Well, execute being the proper... I don't want to get too bleak on it, but he's almost like a right-wing dream in this film. He's basically shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah.
But also that's sort of basically one of the themes of the film. We'll talk about the ending later, but that sort of decision he makes at the end is really about him sort of not really quitting the force, but rejecting the sort of the way that policing is out there at the minute. And also then we sort of introduced to his partner early on as well, Chico. And he's not happy about getting another partner, an experienced partner. And that will become a theme of at least one of the later films as well. And we'll talk about it at the time. But
he doesn't seem the sort of person that would deal with people butting into his business.
No. And it seems to be what they did across the franchise was they pair him up with unlikely cop partners every time.
And even in Eastwood's later career, they still carried on doing the same thing by giving him a straight partner that's just going to annoy the hell out of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At this point, seeing the film, we haven't really seen a lot of Annie Robinson, have we? We just did this character in the background.
No, exactly. He's kind of a shadow for the bulk of the opening.
Then we get that police chase. When he's stalking or scoping out victims. Again, that's great cinematography. Again, that helicopter stuff with him running around buildings, the top of buildings.
Yeah,
like you say, it does look even for a film shot in 71 because of that style.
Yeah,
it is aged really well.
Yeah, and at this point, I will say this was probably my biggest problem with the film is that they kind of repeat themselves.
Yeah, there are two
just
or three
with higher states.
Yeah, there are two or three sequences that do feel a little bit samey.
And for a film that's only an hour and a half long,
yeah,
it's a little bit hard to stomach seeing the same thing repeated. That's my biggest bugbear with the film is that there's just some repeating of the story just with a bit higher stakes in the later versions.
Yeah, I did like the way that they sort of to get for the second half of the film where they kind of capture him quite early on, but halfway through the film, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or three, and oh, right, okay. And then, of course, then he gets released. He manages to sort of get himself released and then get himself beaten up. I thought, oh, bloody hell, that's a bit brutal. When he pays that bloke to beat him up.
Yeah.
Just to sort of get Harry off his back.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. It's a really strangely put together film as well, because a lot of the scenes don't seem to have any tie up with the overall story. But then by the end of that sequence, there's some tie in to the bigger story.
Because I mean, there's the, of course, the infamous scene where we get that monologue of his, that speech that I was thinking. And it just seems completely random in terms of the overall story where he sat in the cafe and there's that robbery going down.
Yeah.
But it's there really just, it's the character moment, isn't it, as much as anything?
Yeah.
And it does give us that great speech. I mean, the amount of people who misquote it, though, and say, do you feel lucky? When he never says that.
Yeah.
Do I feel lucky? Well, do you?
Yeah, and I was surprised at how early on that came.
Yeah.
The first time he says it. It's within the first 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's sort of having a bit of lunch, isn't he? And then... It's going on over his shoulder in the background. I guess it's there to show, I think, that he's quite an astute cop.
Yeah.
Even if he's a little bit over the top with the way he handles it.
Yeah, and that ties into what I said earlier, that he clearly knows what he's doing. It's how he actually goes about it is the issue.
Yeah, yeah, which is sort of... Because there's an intimation that something went tits up a year or so before, isn't there, on one of these cases?
Yeah, right at the beginning, that first scene in the police boardroom, where they don't really want him in charge and kind of say that we don't want a repeat of what happened last year.
Yeah. And you're thinking, bloody hell, what? The way they talk about it, what the hell did he do?
Yeah.
It must have been a great free-for-all. I almost want somebody to make a prequel about that to see what he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're clearly quite long suffering, aren't they? The people that work around him.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think that's another great thing about the character that works. And as all of these things, when you're Homage and The Simpsons, you're doing something right. Is it McGonagall? I think the character in that, which is clearly Clint, the Dirty Harry on the telly.
Yeah.
He sounds like Clint and he looks like Clint and then it's Clint. Yeah, so we bally around Briscoe a bit and Scorpio sort of starts ramping things up, kills a copper in a shootout.
Yeah, and there seems to be a lot of urgency with the story that's only halfway through.
Mm.
It's very rapid in the middle segment of it. That it's building up to, as I say, that repeated kind of chase, but just with a little bit higher stakes. But it does, it seems to ramp up really quickly.
I did like the sort of the task sequence that Scorpio's setting him, where he's got him running around the city and jumping on a train.
Yeah.
And I got sort of Die Hard 3 in my back of my mind then, watching that. That's sort of something they do in Die Hard 3, isn't it?
Yeah.
Many years later. It's the fact that we did find out that he's kidnapped a girl. Just this bloke is an absolute piece of shit, Scorpio.
Yeah, absolute psycho. That was literally my second page of notes began with the killer is definitely a psycho.
Yeah, and I say, and all credit to Robinson, he does it so well. He's a really horrible, vile character, this guy.
Yeah, and every time we meet him, he gets worse.
Yeah, you can see he's breaking down as the film goes on.
Yeah, so when he gets stabbed in the leg, I think that's the real turning point that he really does lose the plot, because then he's hampered in what he's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's when he has to go down that route, doesn't he, of sort of getting himself beaten up.
Yeah.
After that sort of sequence in the at the stadium, because Harry learns that he went to the hospital, didn't he, get his leg done, and the doctor said he lives at the stadium. That was nicely done, using that location to film that sequence. Just isolating the two of them in the middle of the pitch. So then we get that whole sequence with the with him being told to lay off. And then you kind of get an insight then into Scorpio a little bit there, how devious he is.
Yeah.
and what ends he's prepared to go to, because the bloke absolutely pummels him. And then he throws in that racist slur, doesn't he? You're like, Jesus, mate.
Yeah, the language was very close to the bone at times, which is fair enough. It's the 70s. We reviewed American Beauty, which was way newer, and that was close to the bone when it shouldn't have been. This you expect from the 70s.
Yeah. There's an interest. I did have one little note on that. We're going back to sort of to his bosses, etc. And they're talking about the treatment of a black victim, I think. The guy, there's a kid, isn't he, shot out in the yard somewhere.
Yeah.
In the crap yard. And they refer to him. Is it that they clearly don't want to use the N-word, and they don't. And that was interesting even then, that the people in charge were trying to sort of not use inflammatory language at that point.
Yeah.
In the 70s. So then you get that juxtaposition of somebody like Scorpio, who's an absolute piece of shit. And to push the guy over the edge uses all that racial slur. He always does kill him, I think. And he gives him that last kick, and he says, that one's up for free, wasn't it? Or something like that, he says.
Yeah. Oh.
But he does pulp him. When you see that shot then of his face.
Yeah.
And it's vile. The makeup is brilliant. It's absolutely vile what he's done to him. He's completely broken his face. Jeez.
Yeah. And I think that the middle portion of the film works really well.
Mm.
The whole build-up of them getting to the point where they've arrested him once, then they kind of want to leave it alone, but he's not going to leave it alone.
No.
And Scorpio knows that he's not going to leave it alone and keeps pushing it.
Yeah. And Callahan knows he's not going to give it a rest, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's because it's Harry himself that forces the guy to sort himself get beat up, isn't it? Because he keeps following him around in the bar, etc.
Yeah.
But it's also the other thing that was interesting is the point that Gonzalez at this point then tells Harry he's had enough of police work. He's only been there 5 minutes. I suppose getting shot though on the line of duty will do that to you sometimes.
Yeah, I guess so. And I think it's a strange one in the States because it's very, very different, isn't it? How you become a cop and everything, and I suppose it's quite a lot easier to walk away in that sense.
Yeah, because they always, especially in the film, they always seem to have another background, don't they? So he's going to become a teacher.
Yeah,
they always seem to come to police work from another background in these films, don't they?
Yeah, very much so.
The other bit that was really brutal is when Scorpio then after this goes to that liquor store.
Yeah,
he's been right polite here,
and then he comes him over the edge.
Yes, bloody hell, he's gonna have fucking one, didn't he?
Yes, jeez.
And then nicks the school bus.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of where I feel like the repeating begins.
Yeah, it also
like it's on a higher. Yeah, it's a higher stakes version of what he did earlier in the film.
Mm. Yeah.
So in this case, it's not one girl, it's a whole bus full of kids instead.
Yeah. But I do like how the kids are slowly pissing him off, though. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
Just by being kids, you know. They're scared kids, mate. What do you expect? But he's trying to get them to sing, and then they're just sat there crying. Dude, what do you think was going to happen? But I do love that bit then, of course, leading into that climax where the bus goes up to the bridge.
Yeah. And that was an action sequence I wasn't expecting.
No. But it's just the way that's really iconic, the way he just stood there and then you're just waiting for him to jump on top of the bus.
Yeah.
And it just shows how kind of cool at Callahan is at this point, that he could do that. I guess if they made that film now, there would have been a lot more action on top of the bus kind of stuff. But I think it works in the confines of this film to have it done like that.
Yeah, definitely. And as I say, I wasn't expecting a sequence like that at all. It wasn't in keeping with the rest of the film. I'm not saying it doesn't work, because it does. It just wasn't what I... It kind of came out of left field, is what I would say.
Mm.
Because it's not been an action-packed film. as such.
No, it's for a thriller, it's quite short on what we would think of as thrills, probably now from a lot of movie making. But again, that's the '70s. They were quieter in some ways in that action element.
Yeah.
And well, I say this is why it'll be interesting to watch these five films, to see what the 2 '80s films are like in comparison.
Definitely.
Because it's kind of the '80s then where you've got that explosion of sort of high octane cop films, Beverly Hills Cop, Cobra, I'm trying to think what else it might have been, Lethal Weapon at the back end of the '80s. Whereas the '70s cop films were still kind of, yeah, the violence and the action wasn't quite so cartoony, maybe, as the '80s films.
It definitely, it still feels like a procedural kind of film, like a 70s cop show.
Yeah, with a little bit of shooting and a little bit of violence. But
yeah,
I don't think it's as overly violent as a sort of mystery sort of made out to be. Yeah, the shootout with the bank robbers is quite brutal.
Yeah.
But Scorpio's killings, like one is just a one single shot in a pool in it. We don't see the kid in the scrapyard. We don't see what that one at all.
No.
We see him clock the guy over the head. But in fact, that's what surprised me. It wasn't as violent as I kind of remembered it from seeing it a few years back.
No, and the fact that Eastwood has got this reputation of being that sort of, in those sort of films, I didn't think it was. We've watched worse.
Yes.
On this show. Yes. Films that were earlier than this as well. Mm. We've seen 60s films that have been more violent.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so we get then towards the climax and that bus crashes, which is good, and the kids are safe. And then, of course, the little shit, he has one final go with another hostage, and the poor little kid just minding his own fishing, and then all of a sudden this big hair bloke with curly hair grabs all of him as a hostage. You bastard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we just see how calm Harry can be in a moment like that. And just kind of willing him to shoot him, aren't you, at this point? He's just had a scorpion.
But that still surprised me that he does actually kill him. After all of that, of trying to catch him, he ends up killing him off.
Yeah, and all the shit that it's going to bring down on him.
Yeah.
It's interesting, apparently, because some people thought at the time that basically when Harry then tosses his badge away, it's kind of him walking away completely and quitting. But apparently that was never the intention. It was just to show that it was sort of his commentary on the way the policing was at that time.
Yeah.
And almost just to say that if he's going to carry on doing the job, it's going to be more his way.
Yeah.
Because he cannot do it the official way. And that is based, that without getting too much words with that, is very much part of the theme of the next film that we'll look at next month. So it'll be an interesting comparison on that. So that's the bones of the plot we've picked through. I was just going to see if there's anything else that sort of stood out from my notes or from the information I got. That was one I was going to mention. I did scribble it down in my notes. That line that Scorpio comes out where he says, "My, that's the big one." Very carry on. And apparently it was an ad lib by Andy Robinson. And it was just brilliant. And apparently the crew all broke into laughter as he said it, and they had to reshoot it. No. That was one that I just scribbled down right in the middle of watching. It's so out of left field for this film.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely not one for double entendre, that's for sure.
No, but it works. Because there is, I've just in my note. But of course, that's not long then before we, and then the next I'd written alongside the way my notes were was just stab, ouch, because that's where I think we got one in the leg. You just go through so many different emotions watching the film, but just and little comments. I think anything significant for you that you want to bring up and mention?
Not really. I think we've covered it. I just think that despite the short length of it, the film could have really been over after an hour. Without the repeating, that is the only thing I can come up with.
It almost wanted more of a subplot, didn't it? Maybe even like a subplot with Gonzalez with his partner.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Pop up in one scene, like.
Yeah, it's just one story. We follow Harry throughout the whole film.
Mm. I mean, there's
hardly a scene without him.
We moan that a lot of these films that we watch, they're often too long and there's too much going on. This is a film which could have probably done with a counterpoint subplot. I'd like to see a little bit more of Gonzalez and the decision making that leads to him quitting, maybe, and stuff.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. Could he kind of just, 1 minute he's a cop, he's been shot, I've had enough.
Yeah. And that's the last we see of him. Well, off you go.
Here's my wife.
Yeah.
And so that would have been worked for me. Dad, maybe I had that subplot a little bit more. Just a couple of scenes with him and her and just leading to that decision, just to sort of flesh it out a little bit in terms of the character.
Yeah, and I do think that is the issue. They rely on Harry and Scorpio, obviously. But for the long run, the rest of the characters, most people couldn't care less about them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very singular view film, isn't it?
In its
core. It's very much that A plot, and there's not a lot of plot attached to it. Where I think, but that said, I'm going to give this a decent score because for me, as we'll see across the of the franchise, I think in terms of just filmmaking and what it does, for me, it's the best film of the set. The second one's not bad, I will say. But for me, on that basis, I think score wise, I would probably going to give this something maybe like about 86. I think it's at the higher end of this sort of genre film.
I'm going to feel really bad now because I actually marked it lower than what I'm actually going to give it as well. I'm going to give it a bang on 70.
Just
because of that lack of, as you say, a B plot that kind of leaves the film hanging on its one kind of thread.
You want something else to grab your attention, a little bit. Yeah, I get
it. And for a short film to then be repeating itself, I think it just struggled a little bit in that sense and needed a little bit more.
Mm. Yeah, I get that. But glad to see it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, as I said at the start of the show, my brother loved the box set. It was one of the first things he bought on Blu-ray, so it's something I should have seen years ago.
Yeah,
because I am a fan of Clint Eastwood as well.
Yes. Yeah. Likewise. So, although he did kick us in the nuts when he did one of our films for our other podcast.
Yeah.
If anybody's the film about boxing, that's all we'll say. I say it's going to be interesting to see how these pan out and what you think of them as a franchise come the end as well. Well, I think that's probably it at this point. And thank you, mate. Do you want to just go over the socials?
So you can find us at BPB Podcast Productions on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also email us at strikepodcast@yahoo.co.uk if you want to. That was one of our old podcast. Well, still a current podcast, but with a different name. Still using the same old email. So you can contact us there as well if you need us.
Brilliant. Right. Well, I suppose I think that's probably it now for the first film, Dirty Harry, and we'll be back next month with Magnum Force.